You're listening to Radio Aryan at RadioAryan.com.
Hello, and welcome to Truthful Out Radio. Today's date is Friday, the 22nd of March, 2019, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting live at RadioAryan.com. Because we have with us tonight the producer of Adolf Hitler, The Greatest Story Never Told, Communism by the Back Door, and the Freemasonic Victory of World War II, Mr. Dennis Wise. Dennis, how are you doing?
How's things, Sven? I mean, we've had a bit of a traumatic week over here, but I didn't manage to get much work done. But I did work on it a little bit, about 19 after last week. But there's still a fraction of it I'm just not happy with, so it won't be released just yet.
Well, that's okay, because we've got plenty of interesting subjects to talk about tonight anyway with Richard Edmonds' speech. But yeah, I've just had a bit of a traumatic time. I just discovered our Twitter account has been suspended.
Well, that is a disaster.
Yeah. my life is just totally falling apart. I don't know what I'm going to do with myself. Yeah. I just don't know. I mean, Twitter, we only used it for announcements. And the account was locked. The account was locked, so, you know, nobody could actually... We didn't have any tweets reported for saying things we shouldn't have done, because it was locked. And what they've actually said, they said, we consider abusive behaviour an attempt to harass, intimidate, or silence someone else's voice, which is exactly what they've done to me. They've got no evidence of me doing it to anyone else. They've got no... I've not even had any tweets reported to me. I mean, it's just so childish.
Well, they have to report back, don't they, to say, we've done something.
Yeah, but it's so petty.
Even though it's just what they've done.
It really is petty. All I did was put announcements on there. I didn't get involved in conversations or anything like that. It's just ridiculous. Yeah. I mean, it's not going to affect us in any way whatsoever. It's pathetic. It really is. Just looks bad on them. Anyway, as I said, we've got lots of... really interesting stuff to get into tonight. We're going to be talking about revisionist history heroes. And this is a subject that we get into every so often, but we rarely devote a whole program to it, to the people involved in it. And without them, you know, I mean, you really wouldn't have your documentaries, Dennis, really, if it wasn't for, you know, these fearless researchers going back and, you know, going to these camps and testing them to see if there's any cyanide there, digging up the blueprints, all that sort of thing. You know, without them, we wouldn't have any proof for this. We just have ideas. And they're the guys that, you know, they find the evidence. And a lot of them have done a lot of prison time for this, which is disgusting. Right. It's absolutely disgusting just for having a different opinion. And they get accused of inciting racial hatred when all they're trying to do is get to the truth of what happened in history. Something which you're expected to do with everything else is just World War II. For some reason, you're not allowed to ask questions about. You just have to shut up and accept what you're told, or else you get sent to prison. Thankfully, not quite in Britain yet. We don't have Holocaust denial laws in Britain, but I think it's 27 countries in the EU that have them now.
Yeah, well, not only that, they start to use the state law now as well, I think, not replace the Holocaust laws. They're just there for the time being, but nothing's to say that things won't change in the future.
Well, they've also, when any country wants to join the EU, they have to sign up to instituting Holocaust denial laws, and they also have to put a Holocaust temple there. One of the Holocaust museums, they have to have one of them put in the capital city. It's part of joining up with the EU. It's that important to the New World Order that people believe in this.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Because it helps get rid of us as well.
Well, it helps to silence us, doesn't it? Because they can say, well, that's where nationalism leads to. Six million dead Jews. And when people say, well, hang on a minute, it may not have actually led to that, then it takes the wind out of their sails, doesn't it?
Well, another reason is that people often say, up to Hitler doing the Holocaust, he seemed all right.
Well, that's it. If you take the Holocaust out of it's like, well, why did they destroy half of Europe?
Exactly. So you need that just as a what they would call a backup.
It's a cosh to beat the goyim over the head with whenever they start showing signs of wishing to get together and ethnic solidarity. You can say, well, because it's all about hate. It's all about hatred of the other. It's not about hatred of the other. It's about love of our own people, love for your own family, and doing yeah. what's right for your own family, and doing what's right for them first, because nobody else will. That's the point.
They don't like the family, do they? They don't like this thought of a strong family structure, because, you know, even now I can go on Facebook and I can see relatives in different countries and speak to them, and there's still a link there, but they'd like to kill all that, swipe it clean, and you're just an individual.
That was part of communism, isn't it? They said that the family was at the root of it. There's a book called The Authoritarian Personality, and it says that the father in the home is the prototype for fascism. That's the prototype for the fascist dictator. So to target, to prevent fascism rising again, is to destroy the family.
Correct.
What kind of crazy logic is that? I mean, it's just satanic, isn't it? It's turning things on its head.
That's exactly what it is, yeah.
That's the basis of civilization that they're trying to destroy. Anyway, getting back to what we're going to be talking about tonight, we're going to talk about this specifically because Richard Edmonds has just been over in Germany protesting truth in history, and he has sent out a circular with details of that and also details of his speech, which has been translated into English. And we're going to go into his speech and we're going to talk a little bit about some of the people that he brings up in it. And first off, we've got a bit of a description of what went on. On a cold, wet and windy Saturday, the 16th of March, the spirits of German nationalists and campaigners for truth in history were high as they held a successful public rally in the centre of the historic German city of Brandenburg, Richard Edmonds reports. Standing in the public square amongst crowds of shoppers, with the trams rattling past and with 100 lefties positioned just across the street, some 40 strong nationalists campaigned for the release of German patriots jailed for questioning the so-called Holocaust. From the nationalist ranks, speaker after speaker denounced the injustice of jailing men and women for the crime of asking questions. The high point of our demonstration came when one of the young women supporters read out the message written by the brave Ursula Haverbeck. Frau Ursula Haverbeck recently celebrated her 90th birthday in her prison cell in Bielefeld jail. Last year, Frau Haverbeck was sentenced to multiple years of imprisonment. Her offence, she had asked, did the Holocaust really take place? The success of our demonstration was confirmed when the local regional television in its evening news programme reported on our Free Political Dissidents campaign. The TV station showed a still photograph of our activity together with the broadcast of a two-minute rant made by the city mayor, a Christian Democrat, happily standing amongst the Antifa counter-protesters. Just think about that. He stood there with the equivalent of the communists that were occupying East Germany on the other side of the Berlin Wall, the people that we were told were the enemy, and the mayor is now sort of quite happy to stand there amongst the same people. Why would that be? Why would that be? At least they did actually manage to hold this protest. I know they have strict laws on it.
Yeah.
You know, they're very strict laws. They have to say what they're actually going to be saying beforehand. They have to say what's going to be on the placards beforehand. And if anybody sort of goes from that and says anything that isn't actually down on the pre-approved script, then they run the risk of being arrested, as happened to Lady Michelle Renouf a while back at one of these protests. I mean, we think it's bad.
Go
on.
No, there's an interesting case of David Irving, who was speaking in Austria, was invited over there, and was absolutely word careful not to say anything, but was still arrested and given a 12-month sentence. And when asked why, they said he was capable of saying such things.
So he might have said something. He didn't, but he might have done. So they
had to arrest him. Yeah.
just unbelievable. I mean, we think we've got it bad in Britain, but in Germany, it's, you know, they've got a special police. You know, we've got MI5, and MI5 are now investigating nationalism. They're infiltrating nationalism. But in Germany, they've got a specific secret police specifically for investigating political groups to see if they get too close to nationalism. If they get too close to nationalism, they will be shut down. And the alternative for Deutschland, who are actually in government at the moment, I think they're the second most popular party there, something like that. Mm-hmm. And they've got candidates in every part of Germany. And they were recently investigated by this group, and they had to go to court to prove that they weren't extremists. Think about that. Alternative for Deutschland. They were going to be classed as extremists, and they were going to be investigated by the secret police, and they were going to be shut down. And they are actually in government at the moment. They're the opposition in parliament.
Yeah, that's how crazy it's getting.
Well, it shows you how little power the actual German people have, doesn't it? It's an occupied country.
Yeah, it's a funny thing, really. I listened to an interview on Radio Aryan by one of a female interviewer. I can't remember her name now.
Carolyn Jaeger?
Yes, Carolyn Jaeger. That's the one. I was going to say she's one of your favourites. And she was interviewing a German woman, 70-year-old German woman. And the way the German woman was talking was that, in a way, she couldn't believe that how German was being portrayed as non-Christian. She couldn't believe that in her own village, for instance, the Germans all looked down on her for trying to make a point that it was the Jews, because that's exactly what happened after World War II. The Jews all went back in, replaced all the Germans what Hitler had in place. And very few Germans actually know that today. And so, and they've completely covered everything from, you know, from churches to parliament to shops to solicitors, lawyers, everything, all controlled. And the Germans are, from what it sounded like, are completely oblivious.
Well, it's the mainstream media as well. All the press, the newspapers, the magazines, they are all licensed. You have to get a license to do that. And these licenses were all given out to cultural Marxists, basically. And they did a big experiment. I mean, but they basically pushed lots of degenerate sexual stuff from the late 60s onwards to distract the Germans. E. Michael Jones has been talking about it recently in his Culture Wars magazine, how it went on. It was part of the denazification program. The denazification program, they showed these horrific acts that were supposedly carried out by the Germans. Some of the listeners out there may have seen the videos where it shows you the Germans going into the camps, and they've got a little table there, and they've got what's supposedly human skin stretched on a lampshade. You've got human skin gloves, a skull ashtray. And this was all just put there to horrify the German people and say, look, this is what the National Socialists did. They were such horrible people. And that was denazification. And this sexualized took place after.
Yeah, they did the same after World War One, but they did not television then. Or they would have done the same thing then.
Well, yeah.
TV changed everything.
They brought over a special film director, didn't they? Billy Wilder.
Yeah, from Hollywood, yeah.
Yeah, Jewish film director to make these camps look as horrific as possible. And all the dead bodies, the people that had starved because of the terror bombing by the Allies, the viewers were told, these are all Jews that have all been gassed. And of course, that's horrific.
Hitchcock was there as well, I believe. Alfred Hitchcock.
Yeah, I wouldn't doubt it. I suspect a lot of effort went into doing this. They certainly knew what they were doing. And it's gradually become increased since then, because there was a while that it just wasn't talked about, because it was just so horrific. It must have taken a while to sink in what they'd been accused of. And then in the 70s, the Jews started producing all these Holocaust movies in Hollywood. And a TV series on it. And then it became like a staple at the Oscars. And if you do a film about the Holocaust, you're going to win the awards, and it'll be best film of the year.
Which has been proven,
Yeah. Yeah, Schindler's List, that was won an award for best fiction in the first year that the book was written.
The lady out of Titanic as well, who was advised by Ricky Gervais to make a Holocaust movie if you want an Oscar. She did, and she won one.
And I think they've really rolled it out across the rest of the world now, haven't they? Because all the kids at school, they have to go through Holocaust education lessons.
Well, that's the problem. They're going to get them early, get them young, and it's going to take some breaking down, should I say, to get them to see the truth.
Yeah, they show them these horrific things and say that this is where nationalism leads to. This is what the Europeans were doing before we liberated Europe. And then while they're all shocked and horrified, then they say, and now have a look at all this pornography. And isn't it wonderful? You can all, you know, have sex with each other now, and you can have free love, and you've got contraception, and you can have an abortion if you get pregnant. It's all wonderful. We can all have sex with whoever we like, whatever we like, whatever gender we like. And people, where they're so shocked and traumatized by what they've been told they've done, they just fall for this and they become distracted by it. That's the way it works.
Sorry about this.
No, please do. You've got something to say, Dennis. You just say it, mate. Don't worry.
Well, what I was going to say is that they have nowhere to turn now. Once they're taught all this, they've got nowhere to turn. They can't turn and say, well, this country's saying that and they're denying it. What will be within a number of years, every single country will be of the same opinion. And people like ourselves, for instance, are being closed down, you know, squeezing the oxygen on us. You've had your Twitter, and even though it doesn't really affect you, but it has affected some people. And so we get less and less of a voice while the whole world takes on this theory. So how can you deny it never happened?
The thing is, when they prevent people from talking about it, when people can no longer talk and discuss things, that's when they use their fists. That's when the violence comes in. That's when you get the massacres like what happened in New Zealand. I mean, it's since they came out with all this censorship that we've started seeing what's called far-right extremism. It's all come about since the censorship came about.
Well, this station's never advocated violence. I know it hasn't. And the violence, what happened, could easily cause a tit-for-tat, which is exactly what these people behind the scenes want. You know, I mean, the stabbing of the, we don't quite know about the stabbing of the Catholic priest in Canada, who was responsible, but, you know, these things, it wouldn't surprise you if it was, you know, a Muslim backlash. But this is exactly what they want. It'll force people to go into their own concaves, if you like, you know, the whites and the Christians will stick more and more together. And even the non-violent Muslims will mix back in with the Muslim communities, even though there'll be ISIS fighters in there, all sorts. So it just doesn't, you know, you can see what's going to happen eventually. Civil war is going to happen, but nobody's advocated it on it really well, I know.
No, we do all we can to avoid situations like that occurring. And, you know, part of it is understanding the truth of what went on in the past. That's more important. I mean, if you know that you're right, then it doesn't matter what other people say. You can keep your pride because you know that you're right and they're wrong. And we have to know the mistakes we've made as well in order to not make the same mistakes again in the future.
Exactly.
Historical truth. And that's what they were protesting about here. Truth in history, the importance of truth in history. And as I said, this circular comes from Richard Edmonds, veteran British nationalist who was in the BNP, he's in the National Front, and he goes out there to Germany to the actual courtrooms where these people are being tried, as well as these protests. He's a very, very valiant man. And this is the speech that he gave. And he began with, "Dear German friends, my name is Richard Edmonds. I am British. A few years back, a group of us travelled to Brandenburg-Havel in order to show solidarity with you at the rally that was held in support of Horst Mahler. Mahler had been locked up in the Brandenburg jail for disputing the so-called Holocaust. It is appalling that years later, this man who lives for the truth and who campaigns for the honour of Germany should still be locked up in prison. The man is 83 years of age. He is suffering from diabetes, as a result of which both feet have had to be amputated, and still he is not released." And I'll just say here that he did actually go to Hungary and he applied for asylum in Hungary. so that to stop him from being sent back to prison, because they let him go back home to have his legs amputated, and then they wanted him to go back to prison again. And he managed to make his way to Hungary, and, you know, much as we think Orban is good, even he couldn't stop this happening. And he's been sent back to prison again, and he's 83 years of age. Can you imagine them doing that to anyone else for any other crime, sending them off to prison when they've just lost both their legs?
Yeah, amazing.
And, you know, Horst Mahler is an interesting chap as well. I mean, he was with the Biedermeierhof gang. He was a dyed-in-the-wool leftist. And they loved him when he was a leftist. He got lots and lots of
I never knew that, by the way.
Proper media coverage. Yeah, and then he discovered that he was following a lie. And then he started looking into history, discovered that, you know, what we've been talking about, and then he's been persecuted ever since. So that's just one of them.
I think he's been defiant ever since as well, because he made a video not long back and he was as defiant as ever.
Well, this is it, because they know that they're on the side of the truth.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't matter what you do to people, you know, that you can't turn around and lie, because you're just lying to yourself.
Exactly.
Just let me cough a minute before I do the next bit.
Well, of course, the truth's always going to come out. It may take many, many years, and it'll take, you know, many laws and you know, prison sentences to keep it under wraps, but it will come out. You know, there's no denying it'll come out.
Truth always comes out in the end.
Yeah.
Continuing. When we were previously here, one of the speakers on behalf of Mahler was the very brave Ursula Haverbeck. Now the 90-year-old Frau Haverbeck is herself in jail in the Bielefeld prison. We all know that the heroine, Ursula Haverbeck, has campaigned untiringly for years for the truth and for the honour of Germany. I think she was even on a Panorama programme as well. And all she has done is simply ask a question. She hasn't said the Holocaust didn't happen, or there wasn't any cyanide found. She has just said, can you give me the specifics of it? Can you tell me where the crime actually took place? You know, how many people actually died there? Where's the records of it? Where's the evidence? That's all she's done, is ask questions. She hasn't written a book, you know, like others have done. That's all she did. 90 years old in prison.
Amazing. Yeah, absolutely amazing. But there's still this purge, this communist purge, what went on after World War II, and I've spoken about many times about how they managed to get a lot of them out through the pipelines of the church. And it's still going on. People, you know, all ages, amputated feet, still talking out against it, and they're being purged.
That's what it is, isn't it? It's like the purges during communism when they would just get rid of people, get rid of the dissidents. Right. And the majority just doesn't realise that. They think we live in a free world, we've got free speech, we've got free association. And then you hear about, you know, these 90-year-old women in prison for asking
questions. They keep it out of mainstream, I think, don't they? They don't tend to advertise the fact that they just jailed somebody over an opinion. I don't know, but the situation in Germany is probably the same. I don't know, but certainly, you know, it's very rarely mentioned on, if ever, on BBC News.
Well, they make the lawyers out to be great heroes, don't they? They did that film about David Irving a while back, didn't they? Making the woman out to be a great hero, and she was the underdog, and, you know, and it wasn't mentioned that she had, you know, ambassadors from Israel there. Ambassadors from Israel, I think the Prime Minister of Israel in the court or whatever it was, and millions and millions of pounds worth of money on her side. And if it had been found in favour of David Irving, you know, Britain would have been in trouble. It was a global political geographical thing. Global trial. What's the world?
The guy who mentioned Schindler's List and all the other movies, Back to the Future, I think that he was there as well.
Yeah, there you go. They don't tell you that in the movie. They just make out she was the poor little underdog, and David Irving was, you know, they make him out to be wild eyed and, you know, quite angry. And he was just asking for proof. Just asking for the proof. Continuing, he said, and so have many others. For example, the lady lawyer, Frau Sylvia Stoltz, was also jailed for years in the German Federal Republic because she too campaigned for justice and honour. Frau Stoltz was the defence lawyer for the German-Canadian Ernst Zundel, who in the year 2003 was accused in the German courts of Holocaust denial. Zundel's trial became notorious. The judge in the case, Dr. Ulrich Meinersagen, found himself obliged in open court to announce that, and I quote, "It is completely irrelevant whether the Holocaust took place or not. Denial of the Holocaust is a criminal offence, and that is all that matters in this court." And I'll just stop there, because the very fact that the judge actually had to say that shows you that it had been proved that it didn't take place.
Well, in the first court case, what happened was Doug Christie, the really talented lawyer which Sunderland employed, he interrogated all these Jews what had come to celebrate a kind of an execution or something like that. And they'd been authors of books and things, you know, and they spoke about certain numbers which were proven to be incorrect when under interrogation. And so we've never got an official minutes of this court which shows exactly the problems these Jews had, because they have to go back and change even their own books because of this this court case. But eventually they did get him. But you know, if they want to, you know, wants an official look into the Holocaust, that is the place to go. The first Sunderland case, because it's all officially wrote down, and you can see the problems that the Jews were having.
There's a book, The Great Holocaust Trial by Michael Hoffman. He documented it because there were...
It
was all covered in the newspapers and on Canadian television at the time, because they were so certain that Ernst Zundel was going to be completely trashed and he would look a complete fool. And they cross-examined the witnesses and they showed that the witnesses didn't know what they were talking about. And there were some news reports that reported this, and those news reports have been scrubbed. But it tells you about them in the book, and it shows you the like the print copies of them, because the actual video of it was scrubbed, because it showed to
it
people.
Would have been. Yeah, for sure.
It was made up. I mean, we're not saying Jews weren't persecuted in the Second World War. They were persecuted.
Not at all. Yeah.
They were, you know, but they weren't gassed. 6 million of them were not gassed to death in a deliberate plan by Adolf Hitler, which is what the Holocaust narrative is. We're not saying they didn't suffer. They did suffer. It's just that it didn't happen in the way that we've been told, and we just want to find out the proof about it. And Ernst Zundel went a great way to doing that. So they really had it in for him after that. And they kidnapped him. They kidnapped him, didn't they? When he was on holiday in America,
more or less,
and spirited him off to Germany.
Well, his wife was in America. I think he actually decided to retire, to be honest, and he was let into America to live with, because his wife was a citizen anyway. They said there was something wrong with his passport one night. They came, took him away, deported him back to Canada. He spent 2 years in solitary confinement without charges, and then he was sent to Germany for trial, where they knew, the odds on him getting prison and a long sentence were favourable, and he got 5 years, didn't he?
Shocking. Poor man. He was a shadow of himself when he came out after those 5 years, but he still refused to recant.
You know, interestingly enough, when he came out, he said something on the lines of, I've been watching the TV while I was in prison. Like, I see Obama seems to, you know, it's a good thing. It looks like Obama's in now and things are going to get better. And he were completely fooled himself.
Well, that's good. That's good. I think things have got better in some ways since then.
Yeah, but he was looking at Obama as more of a good thing, where in the end, Obama proved to be a communist in disguise, really.
Yeah, he was. Continuing here, as a result of her energetic defence of her client, Ernst Zundel, Frau Stoltz was condemned to several years of imprisonment. So the lawyer herself was jailed for being too good at her defence of her client. Zundel himself was jailed for 5 years at the Mannheim prison. The pair of them are heroic patriots. And I thought we could stop here and have a little look at what happened to Sylvia Stoltz. And I got some of this from Wikipedia and edited it slightly. Sylvia Stolt said the judges who jailed Zundel deserved the death penalty for offering succour to the enemy. In her view, Germany has been under a foreign occupation which has portrayed Adolf Hitler as a devil for 60 years. But that is not true. And what she means there, offering succour to the enemy, is because Germany is still at war. There was never a peace declared between Germany and the Allies. Yeah. So that is what they are doing by running these German courts. So, because it may sound, you know, as if she's being deliberately confrontational there, saying they're offering succour to the enemy. But in law, that is the case because Germany is still at war. It was occupied. There was no peace declared.
Yeah, it's a colony.
It's still occupied. During the March 2006 trial, she called the Holocaust the biggest lie in world history. Zundel was eventually convicted in February 2007 and served a five-year term of imprisonment. Stolz was convicted in January 2008 of the same and additional offences and sentenced to a 3.5-year prison term. She was also banned from practising law for 5 years. Then she came out on the 13th of April 2011, and in 2012 she was invited by Ivo Sasek, the founder of the Anti-Censorship Coalition, as a guest speaker at their 8th conference held in Switzerland, where she spoke on the 24th of November 2012. In January 2013, Daniel Kettiger, a Bernese lawyer, Bern in Switzerland, filed a criminal complaint to the Graubünden prosecutor's office against both Stolz and Sasek. He accused Stolz of transgressing Swiss race law, Article 261 of the Swiss Criminal Code, in that she stated that the Holocaust has never been proved by a court of law, that findings on the location of the crime, the method of assassination, the number killed, the time period of the crime, the perpetrators, the bodies, or evidence of any murder are lacking. As is finding the fact that there was ever a Nazi intention to kill Jews. So that was her crime, was pointing that out, that there is actually no legal record of any of that.
Well, I remember that YouTube video coming out and I watched it before she was arrested. And in that interview, she actually said, being a lawyer, she knew the boundaries, what she was held by back in Germany. And so she was quite confident in what she was saying was not breaking any of the laws in Germany. What they've done, obviously, is twisted it to the laws in Switzerland.
Right. Because also, I mean, what she's pointing out here, how can it really be illegal to say, well, where are the records of the exact location of this crime taking place? Where are the records of the method of assassination? Where are the blueprints? Where was that entered into in law? This is the way that they did it. I mean, it wasn't. There was just these confessions that some of the Germans at Nuremberg were forced to sign. Where's the number killed? Where are the bodies? Where's the autopsy reports of bodies that were gassed? There aren't any. Where is the proof of the intention to do that? I mean, there must be a record. If you're going to say that they intended to do this and it was a plan, there must be records of it, but there aren't any.
Yeah, well, what people probably, well, not everybody will know, is that in a Holocaust denial court case, there's no plea of innocence. You're either guilty, please be lenient, or guilty, I'm insane. That's your choice. And that's how difficult it is for lawyers in Germany to actually defend these people. Because, you know, if they seem to be getting anywhere, then they're now going into that unforgiving ground, so to speak.
Well, that's all come about since these cases as well, when they said, look, it doesn't matter whether it took place or it didn't. The fact is that it's illegal to deny it. So they, you know, that prevents them from saying, well, call the witnesses in, let us cross-examine the witnesses to see whether what they're telling you is the truth. That mm-hmm. prevents them from being able to do that now. So that this is the way that it's evolved over time. So you've just either got to plead guilty or plead insanity. And there is a recent guy in Austria, and he's been released from prison for saying that he's mad, basically. And he'd been in prison for about 20 years. And all he'd been doing while he was in prison is writing to the various heads of the municipalities there and asking them questions. And because he'd been writing to them and asking them questions, they just kept him in prison.
They classed him insane, yeah.
Yeah, he'd been in there for well over a decade. 13 years, I think, he'd been in. And then they finally said, right, we're going to release you because we're going to say that you're insane.
Incredible.
And people think we live in a free world.
Well, it's the illusion. I'll give you that.
On February the 25th, 2015, Stoltz was sentenced to 20 months imprisonment by a court in Munich for this speech. And in 2018, the sentence was reduced to 18 months. That sounds a bit strange to me. If she was sent to prison in 2015 for 20 months, that's a year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
But in 2018, which is 3 years later, it was reduced to 18 months. So there must be a mistake there. I'm not sure if she's still in prison or not.
I think she is. I think she got something like 3 years, didn't she, I think? Last count.
Yeah, that's that 20 months imprisonment. It must have been longer than that. Mm-hmm. It must have been a mistake made with that. We've got another one here as well, continuing with Richard Edmonds' speech. The former senior school teacher, Gunter Deckert, was condemned to years of imprisonment because he too campaigned and campaigns for the honour of Germany. The case of Gunter Deckert reveals exactly what is at stake here. In its commentary to Deckert's case, the major German newspaper, the Frankfurter Allgemeine Zeitung, wrote, and I quote, "Were Deckert's view, his interpretation, understanding, or grasp of the Holocaust to be correct, then it would follow that the German Federal Republic would be based upon a lie. Every speech made by the President of the Republic, every commemorative minute silence, every history book would be based on a lie. Insofar as Deckert denies the murder of the Jews, he challenges the legitimacy of the German Federal Republic." And that's from the Frankfurter Allgemeine Zeitung of August 1994.
Yeah, that's why. The Federal Republic being the exact same as the French Revolution. Republic, what turned up after that?
I mean, that's why it's so important. If people say, well, why is it important? It happened 70 years ago. That tells you why. Because the whole of Germany is based upon that. The whole of what we think of as Germany is based upon this. And it all rests upon this lie. And this is why the Germans feel so much guilt and so much shame. And they're so browbeaten. They're terrified to speak up about anything. They've just got this guilt on their shoulders that they carry around with them, which they shouldn't have.
And no, it's still been put on them because there was a YouTube video showing when the Ukraine was being warned, I think it was by the ADL, I think, some organisation, were being warned, Fox is called, and he was warning them not to confuse your so-called Holocaust with the Jewish Holocaust. And then right at the end of the interview, his wife's being interviewed. And the guy actually says to his wife, who's doing the interviewing, said that, is Abe always like this? So, you know, front in your face. And she said, oh, yes. Oh, yes, we must keep this guilt on.
It's terrible when you think about it. Terrible. To think, I mean, it's false witness. That's what it is. It's bearing false witness and saying that somebody's guilty of the most horrendous crime and they actually weren't guilty of it. And it was just a convenient lie to tell. I think the Jews at the time, you know, rightly or wrongly, they were very upset at the treatment that they'd had, you know, very, very vengeful. And they just seized that chance.
Yeah, they poisoned the water.
Yeah, well, they seized that chance. And it wasn't just the Jews either. You had Britain that had just bombed the hell out of Germany, and they needed a convenient excuse to justify that. They needed to come up with something so that they weren't seen as the bad guys in history. And they had this propaganda.
Coming by the back door, there was a letter which was printed in the 1950s in a book, which went on to explain how just before the invasion of the Bolsheviks, the British government went to the clergy of Britain and the BBC to say, we need you to support us. The only way we can, because people are now used to this you know, after World War One, where they condemned the Germans for killing Belgian babies with bayonets. They said, you know, they needed atrocities worse than the atrocities of what the Bolsheviks were going to cause, because plain innocent, like, you know, they said, well, you know, we know what the Bolsheviks are going to be like. Well, they knew what they're going to be like anyway, because they were told what to do. But at the end of the day, was they invaded Poland before and showed the usual, you know, prowess of raping and plundering. And he says, you know, this is going to happen, but we don't want it to look bad on the rest of the Allies. So if you could kind of fall in line with everything we say, we'd appreciate it. And they did.
And they just continued that propaganda, because there had been, you know, whispers that there had been gassings. And the British had investigated that and discovered that there wasn't gassings going on. But it was helpful to have this rumour going around the camps. So that this rumour was going around. And then when they were liberated, that was what the Jews said. And a lot of them may have believed it. I mean, because they weren't that particularly that well educated. If they'd seen a room that they didn't quite know what was going on in there, and somebody said, well, that's the gassing room, that's where they're gassing the Jews, that's where these ones are disappearing to, or whatever, these ones that have been sent off on the trains, you know, these rumours continued. I think there's one record of the Germans saying, look, this, you know, you've got to stop these rumours. I think they investigated it at one point.
Yeah.
Rumours of this, or killing of the Jews.
What amazed me was the fact that the investigation, at one time, every camp was claimed to have gas chambers. But then at some point during the 70s, the West was investigated and found no camps whatsoever in the West had any gas chambers. But the Soviets refused any investigation in the Eastern camps, because they were the ones, if you originally remember, when they went into Auschwitz, claimed that there was gas chambers there. Stalin was found to have built the chimney in 1947 and altered that air raid shelter according to the guy who run Auschwitz on tape when David Cole interviewed him.
Yeah, the witness account.
You remember, yeah. So the thing is, the Soviets refused any investigation, and so that's now stuck. But I'm surprised that he even found, you know, the West didn't have any.
Well, that was it. The Russians, it was convenient for them to say that this was going on. There's a book, Carlos Whitlock Porter. There's a book by Carlos Whitlock Porter, The Holocaust Made in Russia, goes into all the details about that. You know, really? The way that this was faked so that the Soviets could just blame this onto the Germans. Continuing with.
As did Katyn and all the others.
Yeah. I mean, they've come clean about Katyn. You would think they would come clean about the rest of it. But it's so beneficial. It's become so beneficial for the Jews now, because, as we said at the beginning, they use it as a stick to beat everybody else over the head with. If they start to have, you know, if they start to want their own ethnostate, then they'll use that to attack. And plus, they get all the money from it, the guilt tripping money, all the pensions that they get. You know, Germany has to pay all this stuff to Israel.
It goes to the children now as well, because the law is now that the mental torture caused on the children by the parents discussing it gives them the right there to that, once they die, that they get these payments.
Yeah, they inherit it, don't they?
Yeah.
They inherit the pain of going to these camps. To be honest, they were better off in the camps. At least they were fed in the camps, and the Allies didn't bomb them until the last 6 months of the war, after the Allied had bombed all the cities that had the refugees in them. That was the thing. They had hospitals in these camps, creches. They were work camps. They were working to serve the war effort. How would it have benefited Germany to get rid of all these people that they needed to, you know, make things that were required for the war? It doesn't make sense.
You know, theatres. It's all proven, but you know they have an excuse. Or find an excuse. For instance, the hospitals, they'll claim it were for experiments. You know.
Well, this last revisionist that was brought up by Richard Edmonds, Gunter Decker, his story again is a particularly interesting one, so we'll go into that in a little bit more depth. Gunter Decker was the leader of the National Democratic Party of Germany. That's the NPD. They were the most popular nationalist party before Alternative for Deutschland, and they were further to the right of Alternative for Deutschland. He has served 5 years in prison in Germany for various offences, including Holocaust denial, for translating the Leuchter report an investigation from the United States which cast doubt on the feasibility of mass extermination via the gas chambers in the Holocaust. Do you want to explain a little bit about the Leuchter Report? Because you used that in your documentary, didn't you, Dennis?
Yes, I did, yeah. And what the documentary doesn't actually say there was no Holocaust, which I'm accused of many times. What it actually says is, these are the facts as we know them, and we let you decide. You know, it's just the democratic procedure, if you like. And in it, we explained about Mr. Leuchter. He was hired by Ernst Zundel, and the reason he was hired is because not only was he the leading expert on gas chambers in America, because America was the only country in the world that used gas chambers, he was therefore the world's most dominant gas chamber expert. So he hired him at great cost because it clashed with his wedding and his honeymoon at the time. So I believe the figure was a huge sum to get him to go with his wife on his honeymoon and risk his life by going into Poland and taking these tests to see whether, you know, it was capable of what people have been saying. And not just checking the test, but the actual building itself and everything, because he knew what was needed as an expert in the American gas chambers business. So he went over there and he did his tests, he got away with it, and he noticed that the doors were flimsy and that the furnace to burn any of the bodies what died of typhus or even were cremated through a natural death was next door to where they were claiming the gas chambers were. And apparently he came to the conclusion that there was no way you could do such a thing without blowing themselves up, the soldiers themselves. And since then, obviously, people's looked into it, and they've looked into the demographic of it all and saying that to kill 6 million, you would have to kill 2,000 a day, and just to move the bodies to a certain position would take so long, etc. And even to burn bodies is not that easy because bodies are 90% water. And he took all this on board and came back. And then when he came to court, and let me just say this before going further, he had warned Zundel that if he did find any evidence when he come back to court, he would state that, yes, there is proof of the gas chamber. When he came back with what he was presenting, the judge stopped the trial, took a look, and denied him to give evidence.
Yeah, he was completely unbiased. He was expecting to find evidence of it there. He took samples from the walls, of the supposed gas chamber and from the delousing chamber, and the delousing chamber was blue, Prussian blue, with cyanide traces, and there was none in the supposed gassing room. There was no more in the gassing room than you would find on a normal wall anywhere else. It's just background amounts of it.
Yeah.
So and also there wasn't a sealant. The door, wooden doors that opened inwards. There were glass windows that could have been smashed by the people that were in there. If the people had tried to drag the bodies out afterwards, they would have become contaminated by it. So he basically said it's absolutely impossible for any gas exterminations to have taken place in this gas chamber. And this was the Leuchter Report, really famous report. And Decker,
the government of Poland also did their own after that, again, the same conclusion.
I've forgotten about that, Brett.
Yeah, yeah.
In 1991... Deckert participated in a meeting featuring Fred Leuchter, for which he was later charged and convicted of inciting racial hatred. And he was charged with that because he translated what Leuchter was saying for the benefit of the audience, and said at the meeting that the Holocaust was a myth perpetrated by a parasitical people who were using a historical lie to muzzle Germany. And in 1992, he was sentenced to 1 year in prison. So he basically translated what the American was saying into German. Decker appealed the verdict of his conviction, and at the retrial in the summer of 1994, one of the three panel judges, Judge Wolfgang Mueller, described him as an intelligent man of character for whom the claim was a matter of the heart. Now, I'd say that's the same for all nationalists. It's a matter of the heart. It's not a matter of just blind hatred or anything like that. And another, Judge Rainier Orlett, who had presided over the case and whose prior reputation for revisionist proof opinions had made him seem ideal for the case, declared that Descartes had expressed legitimate interests when he had questioned the political and financial demands continuing to be made by Jews upon Germany almost 50 years after World War II, while the mass murders of other nations remain unatoned. And that's an important point there. It's only the Jews that get reparations for World War II. Millions of other people died. We don't even know how many millions of British died, how many millions of German died, how many millions of Europeans died. We have no idea. And none of them get reparations. It's just the Jews that get these reparations. So these judges, basically, they upheld his appeal. Orlett, in a 66-page opinion, found that Descartes was no anti-Semite, who left a good impression upon the court as a responsible personality of good character, and who merely considered it desirable that research constantly rechecked even historical theses that are considered valid. A very sensible, very sensible judgment decision, I would say. The panel of three judges, however, still found Descartes guilty and sentenced him again to 1 year in prison, but this time as a suspended sentence, in the expectation, in the judge's opinion, that he would avoid punishable involvements in the future, albeit that changes in his political views were not to be expected. So they still punished him, but they said, look, this guy is just genuinely interested in history. He's not a hater. But the Jews went absolutely crazy at this. Absolutely crazy. And the prosecutor decried Orlett's opinions as instructions for denying the Holocaust. The German justice minister called it a slap in the face of all Holocaust victims, and the Association of German Judges called it a slip of the footing. The news media subjected Orlett to a continual barrage of vilification and ridicule. Representatives in the Baden-Württemberg parliament called for his impeachment, albeit that the state constitution did not allow for Orlett's behaviour to be considered an impeachable offence, you see, because he was a judge, not a politician. The view of most observers was an affirmation of the principle of the independence of the judiciary, set down in the German constitution, that an otherwise able judge could not be impeached, especially in response to political pressure from the legislature for injudicious remarks, the Chief Justice above Orlett having called them unfortunate formulations that might be misunderstood in the course of an otherwise competent judicial work product. So there was all merry hell was let loose at this judgment, basically. And as a result of all this, the two judges were suspended and Descartes was ordered to a second retrial. At his third trial, in April 1995, Descartes was sentenced to 2 years in prison without probation for dangerous political incendiarism by Judge Wollentine in Karlsruhe. So it took them three times. Then the third time, the press were happy with it and the Jewish organisations were happy with it after the third trial. Whilst in prison, Descartes wrote a letter to the then vice chairman of the Central Council of Jews in Germany, Michel Friedman, strongly urging him, as a Jew, to leave Germany. This letter was published in the NPD newspaper. Descartes was charged with incendiarism a second time, and at a trial in Mannheim in 1997, he was found guilty and sentenced to an additional 2 years and 3 months in prison. During the trial, Descartes' lawyer, Ludwig Bosch, based the defence upon the assertion that the Holocaust was a legend invented by the Jews. The defence claimed that German politicians legitimised their unique political incompetence through the uniqueness of German guilt, and called both Helmut Kohl, that was the German Chancellor of the time, and Roman Herzog, the German President, to the stand. I bet that was an interesting trial with the Chancellor and the President there.
Herman Kohl, was it? Yeah.
Yeah.
He was the longest serving Chancellor after the war. Was a member of the Bilderbergers, was a high-ranking Illuminati as well, and often visited Bohemian Grove. So he's one of them.
And he got them on the... Descartes got them in the dock. Well, not in the dock, but in the witness stand. You know, being questioned. Bosch was later... In 1999, himself fined 9,000 Deutschmarks for these assertions, which were determined to be sedition. So his lawyer was actually fined for that. But I mean, what a brave man. And I dare say when he was urging him as a Jew to leave Germany, he was probably saying you'd be better off with your own people.
You know, I assume.
Why not live with your own people? Why do you choose to live here? So that's the story of those two. And we've got a final bit here from Richard Edmonds. He says, "Dear friends, I would like to say here that you are not alone. Worldwide, you have admirers for your campaign for the historical truth. For example, the British historian David Irving had to stand trial in Vienna for what Irving had said earlier about the Auschwitz camp. Irving was condemned by the Austrian court to 3 years imprisonment. Last year in London, the world-famous French historian Professor Robert Faurisson gave an hour-long talk before a large and enthusiastic audience over his epoch-making research into the Holocaust. As a guest here in Germany, I cannot do more than quote the former judge of the German Constitutional Court, Judge Wolfgang Hoffmann Riem. I would not make Holocaust denial a criminal offence." And that's what Judge Hoffmann Riem said, as quoted in the Tagesspiegel of the 10th of July, 2008. "Finally, friends, as a foreigner here, I can only say that one bows the head before such German heroines and heroes who have had to suffer for years because of their love for their fatherland." And that's what it is, basically. You know, it's love for their people and love for the truth, and not wanting people to have that burden and pay the price for a crime that they didn't commit.
Yeah, and to stop people from coming forward, they destroyed the career of Fred Lutcher and have done the same to many others.
Well, all those people that we've listed, they've had their careers destroyed.
Yeah.
You know, this is what people should be thinking. These people that get accused of being Holocaust deniers, why do they do it? Their careers have been destroyed. They've been sent to prison. You know, it's not because they're saying, oh, the Holocaust didn't happen. We're just saying that because we want to hurt the Jews' feelings. You know, we don't want to hurt anyone's feelings. We just want the truth to be told. And we want to base our lives around the truth and base our policies around the truth and not have them all based on a lie. The whole of Germany, as we heard that quote there say, the whole of the new Germany after the war is based on a lie. And if you base something on a lie, eventually it's going to fall down.
Yes, it will fall down. It's a question of when. I mean, they can keep it running for as long as they can, but eventually they know it's going to come down.
Oh, it's falling apart. The seams now, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, this is why they're importing all these foreigners into the country. They're on the brink of civil war, and they're also on the brink of a recession, economically as well, which again doesn't really get reported. And you've got Angela Merkel complaining about being bugged by America. She can't do anything about that because they're under yeah. occupation. She just has to do what she's told.
She was supposed to give them a rollicking.
Yeah, I did the. The so-called leaders in Germany, they're not leaders. I mean, this is why you know, people might criticize Alternative for Deutschland and say, well, they're not far right enough. But, you know, they're doing fantastically well just to get to where they are. I mean, the pressure against them and the attacks against them and the whole system is against them. And yet they've managed to get themselves into government. You know, that's fantastic. That's a real success story. Have tons of respect for Alternative for Deutschland for doing that. You know, very, very brave and courageous people, the same as all these revisionists are. I mean, these are revisionists in Germany, which is the worst country of the lot to be a revisionist in, with the strictest laws. But, you know, you've also got people locked up in Austria, in France. You've got asylum seekers from the Holocaust denial laws living in Britain as well.
Mm.
You know, I mean, the British politicians, some of them, Anne Widdecombe, I've heard her say that she's proud that we don't have Holocaust denial laws here because we have freedom of speech. But, you know, she's getting on and that generation are going and the new generation are all dyed-in-the-wool leftists, cultural Marxists, that wouldn't bat an eyelid at squashing all speech critical of.
That's what happened in the Soviet Union.
Protected minorities. Yeah, it is, isn't it? This is exactly what went on in the Soviet Union. You had capital punishment for being critical of the Jews. Anti-Semitism was capital punishment. Mm-hmm. And if you said different to what the state said, then you ran the risk of being sent to jail and also being declared insane, which is the same as you have to plead now in Germany. If you say this happened, you have to plead insanity. It's the same thing. These brave people, anyway, very brave and courageous people that are standing up for the truth.
Especially the lady there at 93.
Ursula Haverback. So we need to remember their names, and we need to keep them in conversation. We need to talk about them to people, and if we can, send them a letter. We've got Ursula Haverback's address at the radioarian.com site on the political prisoners page.
Mm-hmm.
So listeners can check that out. Anyway, thank you very much for coming on today, Dennis.
Pleasure.
Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. We'll be back next week with more Truthful Out Radio for you. And of course, we do hope you have a great weekend ahead of you.